Education Subcommittee on Higher Education for Monday, March 19th, 2007. Welcome to all. A gentle reminder to turn off cell phones if you have them, because the speaker system is very sensitive in this hearing room. I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 3024. Mr. Olson, if you'd be so kind as to let us know what this bill is all about.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3024 changes the name of Oregon Health and Science University Board of Directors to Portland Metropolitan University Board of Directors, expands the membership from 10 to 15 members, also establishes Portland State University as a public corporation under the control of Portland Metropolitan University's Board of Directors. It removes Portland State University from the Oregon University System for Business Matters, declares the legislative intent regarding Portland State University budget and funding, and becomes operative July 1st, 2009. Mr. Chair, this bill has a subsequent referral to the Joint Ways and Means Committee, and as of yet, we do not have a fiscal impact statement. There is no revenue impact. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Representative Greenlick, it's great to see you, and I look forward to hearing what you have to say about this bill.
Well, I'm very happy to be here now, sitting in a regular chair. It feels pretty good to me. This is the first time in 3 months. Thank you very much. Mr. Chair, thank you very much for hearing this bill on creating a comprehensive university in the Portland metropolitan area. There are three sets of reasons why this idea is a compelling idea at this time.
Representative, before you go further, please, if you introduce yourself.
I'm very sorry.
That's
thank
okay.
you very much, sir.
That's easy to about.
I'm State Representative Mitch Greenlee, House District 33, Northwest Portland, all the way west to the North Plains. And as I say, I'm very happy to be here to testify on this bill. There are three sets of reasons why this bill is a compelling bill at this time, why this idea is a compelling idea at this time. And they include, first of all, I believe we need to have a major university in the Portland metropolitan area. I believe we need that for economic development. I believe we need that for educational programming. And I believe we need that in order to attract the kind of industry to the Portland metropolitan area that the area needs. I also believe, under that first category, that there's only one way to achieve a major university in this area. If I thought there was any other way, I would be supporting that idea, or any other feasible way. I mean, there are some other possible ways. Representative Clemens is not here, so I could talk about shutting down OSU and Corvallis and moving it lock, stock, and barrel and building a new campus for it in the Portland area the way Pepperdine did and moving to Malibu. But I think that's not going to happen. I think if we want a major university, if we believe that that's an important part of our educational programming for the state of Oregon, there's only one way to do it, and that's the ultimate merger of Portland State University and Oregon Health Sciences University. Second, I believe that it's critical for educational programming in the metro area. And I'll talk specifically about the kinds of educational programming opportunities I think come about if we were able to ultimately merge these two institutions. And finally, I believe that that there are economies of scale in running these potential in bringing these two institutions together. It's not something that I've pushed on for very long, but I really do think that we don't need to have in an integrated institution two provosts. We'll hear from two provosts today. I don't mean to imply that either one of them is not doing a good job. They're both doing a great job. We don't need two library directors. We don't need two IT directors. I believe we could save millions of dollars ultimately that can go into the student education by streamlining the potential administration of the two institutions. I just want to give you a moment of my background, and talk about where this came from and my idea. I think I've probably been looking at these two institutions and studying them and pondering on them for as long as anybody around the state. I came to Oregon in 1964 to become director of research at Kaiser Permanente. I held that job for 32 years, and in 1990, I became the chair of public health and preventive medicine at the medical school and spent 10 years, most of that time without salary, as a clinical chair at OHSU. In all that time, in both of those jobs, I taught both at Portland State and at Oregon Health Sciences University. I taught in the Department of Sociology from 1965 to about 1995. I taught in the School of Social Work at Portland State over that time period. And I was very much involved in the development of things at the university. I helped bring the first PhD program, the Urban Studies PhD program, the grant I was able to bring from the Department of Health and Human Services. I helped to develop the Middle East Study Center at the university. I introduced the sociology of sport as a class at PSU in the mid-70s. I've been very much involved in the life of these two institutions. I love these two institutions. So I think the one thing that everybody understands is this is not a hostile attempt on my part. However misguided it is, it comes out of my respect for and my love for these two institutions, which I think are extraordinarily important institutions. Having said that, I sat through economic summits in the metropolitan area, and I kept hearing that one of the barriers to economic development in the metropolitan area is the fact that we don't have a major university. The first time I heard it referred to as a Tier 4 university. Later, when I picked up on that, the verbiage had changed. But I've distributed to you all a list of 500 universities. It's a fascinating list of the 500 major universities in the world. And what you'll notice of the 500 major universities in the world is why OHSU is in that list, in the 150 to 200 category on that list. PSU is not in the list of 500 top universities. Wyoming is, Montana State is, Idaho is. There are, if you look down on the last page, the last two pages, you'll find a lot of universities that we perceive as being probably weaker than Portland State in a lot of areas, isn't in the list. Now, does that matter in any real way? Well, the answer is yes, it actually does matter. Does it mean PSU is not a great school? No. Does it mean PSU doesn't get high rankings for its urban relationship? It's renowned for its urban programming and its ability to integrate students into the urban mission. It's renowned for that. But the fact is, if a corporation is looking to move to the Portland metropolitan area, one of the things it immediately looks for is what universities are available in that area and what are the standing of those universities. If you integrate PSU and OHSU, you create an institution that will move into the top 100 of all institutions in the world just automatically by combining the kinds of things. And you see on there what the rankings are across the different institutions for different areas. The ultimate ranking is a composite score of a set of other ranks. But more importantly than that symbolic matter, is the question of educational programming. I worked hard over the last years to create programs that integrate work at OHSU and PHSU. I started the Master of Public Health program in the state at OSU, OHSU, and PSU. And we have half a Master's of Public Health program at PSU and half a Master's of Public Health program at OHSU. We put those programs together, which we've been unable to do because of organizational blockages doing things seamlessly. And we have a School of Public Health and a fine School of Public Health that would be able to serve our public health needs along with OSU's program into the future. We have two engineering programs, neither of which is a top-ranked engineering school. You put them together, you have a fighting chance of creating a top-ranked engineering school. you put science education together with the facilities at Portland State and OHSU, and you have a chance to move into the 21st century in a seamless education of life science students from the bachelor's to the master's to the PhD and into the postdoc program, because you have resources at both places that are completely complementary. We have the same thing in math and statistics, where there's a excellent mathematics department at PSU that has some statistical capability, but not biostatistical, not the life statistical situation. We have dozens, I don't know what the number is, they're all in my department in one form or another, but probably 30 world-class biostatisticians at OHSU that are anxious to work with the people at Portland State and to have the ability to create seamless education programs, again, from the bachelor's all the way to postdocs. And you can find place after place where that kind of seamless education opportunity comes into play at the ultimate merger of these two institutions. Now, what the bill does is very simple. It's actually a very conservative bill. I know people think this wacky idea is very strange and very radical. But basically, all it does is move Portland State University out of the OUS system for business purposes, not for educational coordination, but for business purposes. Expand the public corporation board that manages OHSU now and put PSU under that board. OHSU had lots of problems making that break, but the fact is they've made the break, they've created the systems. It really will make it a lot easier for somebody to follow up. You heard me ask Dr. Frohnmayer and Dr. Ray what they thought the advantages and the disadvantages of leaving OUS. Well, the fact is they were very cautious in their comments, and appropriately so. But you can see there were some significant disadvantages to moving out of OUS control, and particularly the advantages of moving into the shelter of a board that's already managing an independent public university now. And then the board could take up to 10 years or perhaps more if they needed it to find out how to integrate these two institutions. But what you have at the end, the move wouldn't take place for the first 2 years. At the end of that 2 years, you'd have an expanded board called, what was that, the Portland Metropolitan University Board or something?
Yes.
I didn't think Greenlick University Board would sound nice, so I was much more modest. Of that, independent institutions running in parallel for as long as was necessary and as long as the board needed in order to find a way to integrate those into a single university. I want to point out that I was just looking at the top 15 or 20 universities on this top world ranking. I mean, we always hear discussions about how can this culture, will there be a culture clash when you have the heretical thought of having a university that has an academic medical campus. Well, just to name a few as exemplars, there's Harvard, Stanford, Columbia, Princeton, University of Chicago, Yale, Cornell, University of California, San Diego, University of California, Los Angeles, University of Pennsylvania, University of Wisconsin, University of Washington at Seattle, Johns Hopkins University, University of Michigan, where I came from, Wayne State University, where I came from. And these are all institutions that, over time, emerge as being a complete university. That is one with a lit school campus and an engineering campus and a variety of programs and an academic medical center. They fit perfectly into what the definition of what a major university is, and what I'm proposing would create that same kind of major university. The question is, has it ever been done before? Is this wacky idea completely unique? Well, the fact is it has been done before, and it's been done before more than once. But the prime example of it is Virginia Commonwealth University, which is ranked, I think, in the top 200 now on this list, that was created perhaps more than 20 years ago with the merger of VPI, I think it was VPI, and the Virginia Medical College, and created Commonwealth University, and they had some trouble organizing it. You know, they have the same problem I'm always asked, what will what will the football mascot be for this combined institution? And it's very clear to me the answer is a Viking in a white coat. But, but those kind of issues always become a problem. But the fact is, there is now a major university in Richmond, Virginia, where there was not a possibility of creating a major university any other way. And it's the same vision that I have for Portland. So what I ask you all to do is join me in this vision. If you think it's useful for the state to have a major university in its major metropolitan area, imagine any other way that it could happen. And if you can think of another way that could happen, I'll join with you on that plan to make it happen. But if you think it's not going to happen any other way, then join with my vision of what I think is inevitable anyway. And I have noticed that what I'm sure is inevitable doesn't necessarily seem inevitable to everybody else. I've learned to live with that over time. But join with me in my vision and pass this bill out of the subcommittee to the education committee in full and onto Ways and Means so we can start talking about whether there are fiscal impacts of it as well. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Chairman. Gentlemen, any questions? Okay. Representative Lynn.
Hi, Representative Greenlee. Glad to see you here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I admire you for visioning in the future, merging these two great universities to hopefully make one of the best in the nation. And I admire for the vision. But last time this bill passed out of the committee, and then I waited in the Ways and Means and waited until died. Do you have any hope this time? Hopefully it's moved out in the Ways and Means. Do you have any hope it will get out from the Ways and Means?
I not only hope it will get out of Ways and Means, I believe it will pass in the House, and I believe it will ultimately pass in the Senate. Now, again, I'm pretty optimistic, and I frequently am optimistic about things. But, yeah, no, I did not think it had a real chance in past years, but I do think it has a real chance in this year. One of the things that's happened is one of the criticisms, Mr. Chair, Representative Lim, one of the criticisms in the past was that nobody studied this idea. I mean, I brought it forth in 2003, and people said, well, nobody studied the idea. And I said, okay, how about studying it? And I brought it forth in 2005, and I brought it to the Board of Higher Education, to the OUS Board, and the answer was, well, nobody studied this. And I said, okay, well, how about if somebody studies it? It might be a good idea. So there, at the end of the 2005 session, where it got hung up in Ways and Means, partly because nobody had studied it, there became some commitment to do a study of it. It took a while to get that study off, but the study is underway now and is expected in the first couple of weeks of April. So my hope is that if that study comes out as planned, I mean, if it emerges as planned, not if the results are as planned, it emerges as planned that study will help foster a more rational discussion in Ways and Means about what the implications of it is.
Okay, follow-up question.
Follow-up.
And how many times have you proposed this legislation? And to my knowledge, I know you, last session you did, how many sessions have you tried?
2003, 2005, and now.
So this is a third try.
Third try.
Maybe this could be a third charm, maybe. Mm-hmm. So thank you very much.
Representative Kremel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, nice to see you. Is this the same amended version that passed out of education 2 years ago?
I think the only thing that's different in this version, and it's such a long bill, it's hard to track everything, but the instructions were to do it the same with one additional piece. One of the criticisms that President Robertson had when I met with him about this bill a couple months ago was that he's worried about the whole question of financing and whether the bill itself will hurt the state's willingness to fund student education. You know, and that's part of the reason I had that bill on capitation payment models and things here. So One of the things that I added, I think it's the only thing that's different, is a section that requests the newly formed board to consider possible ways to create a tax base for the institution. The kind of public institution that would be created here is not too much different than, say, the Port of Portland and other kinds of public institutions. So I suggest that they consider ways to create a tax base, or maybe more than one tax base, maybe one for the Academic Medical Center and one for the university itself, and report back to the university, report back to the legislature in the 2009 session about any possibilities for that. That's, I think, the only difference. It's the only intended difference. But there could be some unintended differences in all those pages somewhere.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
I had noticed the taxing ability in here, and was that intended to be statewide? So this Portland Metropolitan University's Board of Directors would be able to do a statewide some kind of tax, or is it going to be just regional?
Well, I think this can only come out of the legislature and to the people eventually. I mean, it'll have to, whatever that idea is. But I can imagine a sort of a healthcare tax to support the academic medical institution in some way, and perhaps a district-wide tax, a modest district-wide tax to support the remainder of the institution. I mean, I'm not presupposing that, but I think it's something that we ought to consider. I think we're going to run into some of the same kinds of situations when, as I imagine is going to happen, University of Oregon and Oregon State University move out of the state board, and we're either going to find a way to finance education on a student-for-student basis, on a cost basis per student for Oregon students, or we're going to try and find some other kind of tax base to support these universities. I was really intrigued during the 2005 session, Representative Crummell, when the governor's budget, the governor apparently got mad at OHSU for some reason, and put in a $30 million budget request that had been $80 million the year before. And then the university came in and eventually got, I don't know, something like $68 million. So the fight was, well, should it be $80 million? Should it be $30 million? Should it be $68 million? And the answer is, who the hell knows what the right number is? Somewhere we need to start taking seriously the funding of higher education. And I think the only rational way to do that is based on support per student educated. And I think ultimately that will be the way to do this. But in the meantime, I think we need to explore other possible funding sources.
I have one more question.
Representative Lim?
Thank you. Just a follow-up to what you said. You mentioned some study group, the study coming out sometime in April. Could you expound a little bit what study group are you talking about?
Well, I assume we're going to hear from OUS today, and if we are, they can talk about it. But when I met with the OUS board during the 2005 session, it was a question, well, nobody studied this. And I specifically asked at that time for OUS to take up a study. I asked again when our session was over and emailed to the chancellor and followed that up again, working also with the governor's education policy advisor to try and get OUS to commission a study. It took them a while to create an RFP for a study, and they did issue an RFP, and there is a study underway, guided by some people from the University of Pennsylvania. I know I was interviewed by it, and I've heard other people have been interviewed by that team as well. So the original plan was to have it the first week in April. It may run a little late, but it's a report of a study to the Oregon University system.
So this is not the study group formed by the legislators, but from the university, OHSU, I guess.
No, from the Oregon University system, from the Board of Higher Education.
Yes, thank you. I heard you.
They issued an RFP and hired the study done.
Okay, follow up. Question. And this bill, the 3024, is mandating that the two universities possibly merge together under the, what's the name of, Portland Metropolitan the university, the board of directors.
The board of Portland Metropolitan Universities, yes. I think it's right.
And instead of mandating it, why couldn't we think about from the beginning that the mandating legislators to form the study group to venture out any possibility instead of just merging it together? Have you thought about that?
Yeah, actually, the 2003 bill in my first session was an interim committee to study it. And that didn't even get out of the Education Committee for a variety of political reasons. Actually, this doesn't necessarily mandate the ultimate merger of the two institutions. It mandates the removal of PSU from the state system and putting it under this expanded board. And it directs the board over the next decade to figure out how to put them together. I imagine the boards at that point could decide not to put them together. And they come back to us and say, we decided we're better off having two universities under this board rather than a single university. I don't think that's what's going to happen, but it is a possible outcome.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Klim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Apologies for my tardiness. I did hear that there was some discussion of taking my Oregon State University and moving it to Portland while I was gone.
Yes, thank it's you. Exactly. I mean, we have a better baseball here, stadium, huh? I think. Yeah. No, actually, I mean, it was a serious question. OSU has tried to move into the Portland market on a variety of places, particularly in engineering. The University of Oregon is moving in to the Portland market. We heard a report on that. I was pondering the ways that we could create a major university in the Portland area. And one way that I imagined would be to move one of those universities completely from where it is into the Portland area. You know, there have been sort of examples of that. A very rich guy gave Pepperdine enough money to move from where they were to a campus overlooking Malibu. That's obviously not going to happen. I mean, there's just too much capital investment and it doesn't make much sense. So failing that, I say to myself, well, how can we create a major university without giving up the enormous capital we've got invested in Eugene and in Ashland and in Corvallis? And this comes to me as the only real alternative. So I did not enter my bill to move Oregon State here. I mean, it would be a useful thing to do now that there's a world championship baseball team, but it doesn't seem entirely feasible.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up. I think you made a comment, and it caught me just a half second late. But did you talk about the likelihood that U of O and OSU might want to leave the state system, though, in general, or your belief that they will at some point?
I believe that's also inevitable. I believe we'll end up with a state system, and I can't talk about the regional university. But the fact is, we don't give any of the three major universities, the three research universities, enough money. All we do is burden them with responsibilities and with antiquated programs. And I think that's why I asked both Dr. Frohnmayer and Dr. Ray the question, what would be the advantages and the disadvantages of leaving the state system for business purposes. But I do believe that ultimately we will have OSU and University of Oregon, as well as the Portland Metropolitan Universities, as independent public universities under independent boards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Representative. Do you have one more?
I do have one more question.
Incredible.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Greenlee, if we were to move in that direction where we moved all of our universities to public corporation status, what then becomes the incentive for the legislature to continue to fund them? Because I think one of the things that we have seen at OHSU is that since they've become a public corporation, we've said, you're on your own. Go out, do good things, keep healing people. Oh, by the way, you do have the statewide mission, and we do expect you to keep taking care of the poor, and we do expect you to keep educating doctors, and we really like you to, accept people from inside the state, even though out-of-staters, can pay more and do pay more. And, oh, by the way, we're going to go ahead and cut the funding. So, I mean, I specifically remember in, I believe it was the 01 session, when OHSU was basically told you can have X number of dollars for program development or you can have X number of dollars for building, but it's not going to be both. and make your choice and then live with it. And what they decided to do was take the X number of dollars, I think it was 10 or 100 million, I don't know, depending on where you put the zero, in building, and then they turn around and leverage that those dollars for additional building on campus and what is now going into the South Waterfront area and that sort of thing. I don't know about the tram. I don't think the tram was in that package, but
the Oregon Opportunity Funding, I think, is you're talking about in that sense.
Yeah. What's the incentive if we move our state universities out and make them independent? What's the incentive for us to continue to support them?
Well, you know, the fact is we haven't continued to support them up till now. We've starved the universities over the last 15 years pretty dramatically. We came back with a little money in the last session and some Oregon Opportunity funds. But the fact is that we have not supported the universities as a part of the state system, and we haven't given them the flexibility to support themselves. If we were a wealthy state, and if we continue to fund the universities, I mean, what are we, 48th in the country now in the funding of our higher ed system? I would say, great. I mean, let's fund it, and let's, you know, and the price is you stay together and you don't have any autonomy, and we'll give you all the money you need and you can go do your educational mission. But we're not. I mean, when Peter Kohler was elected president of OHSU, which I think was probably 16 years ago or something like that at this point, maybe a little more, we funded the medical school to the tune of about 29%. And we promised at that point that we would fund the medical school to 35%. That was his bounty. And we're down to, I don't know, 3% or 4% or something. I mean, and it's the same way. We've been starving all of our university systems, and we continue to starve it. I hope we'll sense that the way we want to fund education is by providing money per student to educate Oregon students, and we'll do that wherever they show up in our public university system and in our community college system. But the fact is, we are starving the universities, and we're not supporting them, and we're not giving them the flexibility to do what they need to do to survive on their own, and consequently, we're losing professors. Our faculty salary level is abysmal. And we don't give them the flexibility to raise the money that they could raise on their own now, and we have to do way better. But I don't see us doing way better, because we all know as well as anybody knows that there's a finite amount of money, and that pot is being competed for by K-12 or pre-K-12. It's being competed for by healthcare systems that are eating us up. It's being competed for by corrections, which went from, what was it, 0.9 million to 1.2 billion in the last session, is going up again because we're going to open up new prisons. So I don't see us being richly funding our universities, and consequently I think we need to give them some flexibility to do what they can to survive. And I hate the idea. I mean, and I hope we will continue to recognize how we as a state need to be supporting the education of our Oregon graduates. Oregon High School graduates.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Greenock. Thank you for bringing the bill forward. They'll join us up here.
For hearing it. Now let's see if I can get out of here.
Should we count to three here?
We'll see.
All right. Very good. Thank you, Andy. Should we go together? All right, thank you. Can we have our two provosts that are here come up? Ray Cook and Leslie Halleck. Oh, very good. Well, while we're getting settled, I'm informed we do have some AmeriCorps volunteers here. It's great to have you here. Welcome. Thanks for doing the work you're doing. Welcome. Anytime you're ready.
Chair Buckley and members of the committee, I'm Roy Cook. I'm the provost of Portland State University, and I'm here on behalf of the university to express some of our concerns over House Bill 3024. And until such time as we can get a little more detail on some of those concerns, to oppose the bill. You'll have copies of this testimony, so what I'll try to do is address some of the what I think are the most important points. As I begin, I really want to thank the committee, and in particular Representative Greenlech, for the obvious interest in continuing to develop higher education in the Portland metropolitan region. PSU has been at this for about 60 years. We've been deeply engaged in the metropolitan community, and we've worked really diligently to serve the region through all of our activities. The attention and assistance of the legislature in this endeavor is much appreciated. I want to just say a few words about Portland State for those of you who might not be deeply familiar with us. First, a few words about our mission and academic organization. We are a comprehensive doctoral granting university, and we are Oregon's urban university, and we have a clear and focused mission. I'm going to read a few words from that. Our mission is to enhance the intellectual, social, cultural, and economic qualities of urban life by providing access through the lifespan to a quality liberal education for undergraduates and an appropriate array of professional and graduate programs, especially relevant to the metropolitan area. And I read it because it's a relative, although it's focused in a sense, it's still a relatively broad mission. And I think that's one of the things that we'll talk about a little bit later. We address our mission through a combination of instructional and research activities in ways that really engage our students and faculty, not only with each other, but with the community at large, and I think we've been recognized for that. And we offer a broad array of academic programs from the baccalaureate through the doctorate. We do serve more students than any other university in the state, and even though we have a clear focus on the metropolitan region, we serve students from all over the state, from most of the United States, and from 88 countries around the world. In fact, we have about 1,600 international students on campus this year, so it's a growing group. A couple of words about our academic and research accomplishments. The interesting part of this whole discussion is I try not to be offended by the fact that people are trying to build a major university in Portland, because Portland State really has developed a national reputation in a number of fields and is well recognized for those activities across the country. Probably the most important example is our innovative undergraduate education program, which has resulted in us being identified by U.S. News and World Report for the past 6 years as having really important characteristics of undergraduate programs that lead to student success. In fact, we like to think we're one of the reasons that whole category was developed in U.S. News and World Report because of our leadership with regard to undergraduate education. Since the category was developed, we've been in five of the six special categories around issues of learning communities for undergraduates, internships, capstone projects, a number of other kinds of activities. And over the years, we've developed some pretty good company as more and more universities have paid attention to those sort of things, places like Harvard and Duke and Cal Berkeley and a few others. So we think that we've made some pretty significant contributions in that area. We have quite a number of graduate programs that are nationally recognized as well. Our Master of Social Work program is regularly within the top 25% in the country. Our Urban Studies and Planning program among the top 10 programs. Our Public Administration program among the top 10 programs. Our MBA program has been recognized internationally for its leadership in both the sustainability as well as issues around social responsibility. And our research agenda is growing aggressively. We are the leader of the Oregon Transportation Research and Education Consortium. It's a national transportation research center. There are only 10 of those in the country. And our electron microscopy and nanofabrication laboratory is one of the most advanced, certainly on the West Coast and probably beyond, and it supports a lot of the activities of the Oregon Nanoscience, well, UNAMI, you know about UNAMI. One of the characteristics of Portland State is that most of our activities are carried out in collaboration, either with community partners, or within the institution. We have quite a number of co-admission agreements with community colleges as an example. In fact, we've developed a new concept, the Metropolitan Collaborative of Universities, where a student can move seamlessly between any of the higher ed institutions, the public higher ed institutions within the metropolitan region. A number of collaborations around community-based research activities, as well as with industries and other activities. And a significant number of the things we do are a result of our collaborations with our colleagues at OHSU. And these have been things that have been found to actually benefit the faculty and have grown up that way. The clear example of that is the Oregon Master of Public Health Program. It's a collaborative effort between OHSU, OSU, and PSU, developed by Representative Greenlick. And this program is currently rated to be the second best in the United States, which indicates that through strong faculty collaboration, we can certainly make good progress. At last count, I was able to sum up over $2 million of ongoing research, which are joint contracts between faculty at Portland State and faculty at OHSU. And that may be a low number because I may just have the PSU side of those numbers, so the actual grants may be substantially larger than that. We have a 3+2 undergraduate-graduate program in bioinformatics where students receive a BS from Portland State and an MS from OHSU through the Oregon Graduate Institute of Science and Technology in Computer Science. Many of our students matriculate through pre-professional programs, and many of our students attend medical school at OHSU. And we have a number of administrative collaborations as well. So there are a large and growing number of collaborative activities between the institutions, and they've grown up by the faculty and our administrators finding some real value in those collaborations. A few comments specifically on the House Bill 3024 regarding its concept and its implementation. When we evaluate the implications of this House bill, we've tried to consider the larger intent of the concept, what it's trying to achieve, and whether this approach really is the best way to achieve it, and whether this particular legislation adequately addresses all of the relevant issues and actually the things that we're worried about in moving this thing forward. We assume the intent is to continue building world-class institutions of higher education in the metropolitan region. And, of course, we endorse this concept. We note that both institutions, however, have already received substantial national and international recognition and have been working diligently within the financial, organizational, and regulatory frameworks that exist to build those reputations. The questions, as we see it, is whether this approach, first of all, making PSU a public corporation and then evaluating a merger between PSU and OHSU, is the best way to address this important issue. We believe there are significant issues that must be considered while evaluating the feasibility of this approach, and that each of these issues cannot be taken individually, but they're related and must be addressed collectively. So we are what we are as a result of all of the things that we do, not just because of any individual issue. So let me briefly outline just a few of these issues, and my colleague, Provost Leslie Halleck, will no doubt touch on some of the same ones as well as others. Our first concern really is process. Our overriding concern here is the process by which this whole discussion is occurring. What's being proposed really represents a very, very fundamental change in the status of Portland State University, recreating us as a public corporation. When OHSU did this, they did it deliberately over a long period of time, with a lot of consideration to the consequences. There are significant uncertainties in this process, and most of the details are not clearly addressed, and where we would be at the end of a 5 or 6 year period is quite uncertain. We're equally concerned that the process is one that's externally imposed as opposed to growing out of the interests of both the faculty and administration at the two institutions. And our experience suggests, although we have not been involved in large-scale mergers, that even internally, as we look to merging departments or even small groups of faculty together, that if there isn't sort of an organic interest in developing those kinds of collaborations, then the success is uncertain at best. A few of the other points that are really relevant. The missions of our institutions are fundamentally different, and we're concerned about how, in the first case, becoming a public corporation, and in the ultimate case, merging the two institutions, will affect those missions. We have a very broad mission with regard to academic program, and most importantly, with regard to access to higher education within the Portland metropolitan region. And even though we're deeply engaged in community activities, we don't deliver significant services in the same way that OHSU does. We're driven largely by the educational mission. So these distinct missions of the institution affect everything else that happens at the institutions. They affect our organizational and structural characteristics of the organization. We're largely organized as a traditional university around academic departments, schools, and that sort of thing, whereas OHSU has significant service units. And this, in turn, this organization impacts our financial models, which are substantively different and is the point of major concern, certainly for us at Portland State. The financial models under which we operate are substantially different. Neither one of us receives what we consider to be adequate support from the state system, as Representative Greenlook indicated. But the state allocation is very, very important to Portland State University. It's difficult for us to imagine how we would transition from a situation where we have our current state allocation to support academic programs to some other kind of condition. As a result, we continue to depend heavily on this state appropriation to conduct our academic programs. And we also observed some of the similar characteristics that have previously been pointed out. As OSU became a public corporation, we've observed their funding from the state to decrease over time. And as you might expect, that concerns us greatly. There's also a substantial difference in the way research is conducted at those two activities, and I'm sure you'll hear a little bit about that later. With regard to administration of the two institutions, of course, that's organized around our financial and organizational models, but it's perhaps the place where we actually are most similar in the sense that we're both very focused on addressing and delivering our unique missions. But we're also very thin in both cases. We have directed our resources toward offering the educational and research activities in the institution, and we have very limited administrative resources. Carrying out something like the transition to a public corporation and then a subsequent transition to a merger are large projects that would require large quantities of time and effort from staff who are already fully engaged and focused on the mission of the institution. We're quite concerned about that. We point out that there are substantial differences in the nature of the academic employees at the two institutions, ours being much more typical of a large comprehensive university. Largely our instructional faculty are tenure line, and also our faculty, both full and part-time, are unionized. And a final concern is the transition cost. It's been observed already that we're both administratively thin. Although we don't have experience with significant mergers like this, I'm sure Provost Halleck will talk about this, some of the ones at OHSU, we do feel safe in assuming that this is a pretty significant endeavor and it will require significant resources. And whether those will balance any savings going forward, we have no idea, but we know that there would be a significant investment required going forward in order to merge develop systems for Portland State as a public corporation and then to merge the two universities beyond that. And we find the bill to be silent on that. So taken together, these issues really represent for us a lot of uncertainty, and we think a formidable challenge that will have to be overcome if the merger is to be successful. So in conclusion, there's very little question that additional resources for higher education would be beneficial to the Portland metropolitan region. We question whether merging PSU and OHSU will accomplish that objective, and more specifically whether this bill is the correct approach even to such a collaboration. We're on the path to collaborating more and more all the time, and it seems reasonable to assume that should a merger be mutually beneficial, we'll both realize it and we'll approach it at that particular time. I thank you for the opportunity to make these comments, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Any questions, gentlemen? Representative Klim.
Mr. Chair, just trying to peek over at the witness list. Are we going to hear someone talk maybe in more detail about the issues of unions on each campus? And you alluded to differences. I'm curious about those. But do we have someone who
we
might...
We do have a SEIU representative.
I can just wait for descriptions of that part.
Okay. Any other questions?
Could I ask one question?
Representative Greenlick.
What university did you come from?
I have an undergraduate master's degree from The Ohio State University, and I have to say that, and a PhD from Colorado State University.
I'm particularly interested in this notion that an academic medical center can't exist in the same place that an academic university is. How did that work at Ohio State? It seems to me there was...
Well, I was a student.
A major medical center.
I was an engineering student at Ohio State, and all I know is that I walked by the hospital on the way to class during the day. My assumption is that it's been there for 20 or 30 years, so it's certainly possible to have a major medical center as part of a large university.
Thank you, Representative. Dr. Cook, the study that was mentioned by Representative Greenlick, have you been asked to participate in that study, and have you had conversations?
Yes. We've visited with the principals who are conducting the study, as have a number of other people on the Portland State campus. We've tried to select people throughout both the administration and the faculty to talk about Portland State.
Very good. Thank you. Any further questions at this point? If not,
thank you. So most of the study groups are the people involved, both of the universities, not the group of outside. Is that correct?
Chair Buckley and Representative Lim. No, that's not correct. This study group is really a consultant who does these sorts of higher education analyses around the country. We're only involved more or less as subjects of the evaluation, not as participants. So we've had a number of we were involved in developing the RFP originally, but since the contract was awarded, we've simply been on the interview side of most of the work as opposed to being involved in conducting the study.
Okay, follow up, Mr. Chief.
Follow up.
So how long took the group to study this issue, and how much was the cost?
We do have the chancellor here, Representative, who might have some information on that.
Thank you. Then I will hold on the question later.
Thank you very much, Representative. Please proceed.
Chairman Buckley and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Leslie Halleck, and I serve as the provost of Oregon Health and Science University. I've served in that role since 1989, and I've been on the faculty at OHSU since 1977. On behalf of OHSU, I want to begin by applauding the goal of strengthening higher education in the Portland metropolitan area. That intent is clearly at the heart of House Bill 3024. The bill's chief sponsor, Representative Greenlick, has been a faculty member and a good friend of both institutions for many years, and as you've already heard, was the primary force behind establishing the very collaborative MPH, or Master of Public Health program, at three universities. It's not only ranked in the top couple in the country, it's touted as an almost unbelievable example of cooperation and collaboration. And in fact, indeed, they said it was unbelievable in the first accreditation review, and it took us a few years to convince them that we could do it. Unfortunately, we're deeply concerned, we being OHSU in this instance, that the approach embodied in this bill won't accomplish the goal of strengthening the universities collectively in the area, but will actually achieve the opposite. The transformation to a public corporation has been a very successful activity at OHSU, but it did not go, as Representative Greenlick mentioned, without a great deal of effort and a great deal of halting steps, three steps forward and two steps backwards at times. This bill would make Portland State University a public corporation essentially instantly and merge it ultimately if that becomes the recommendation. But before any analysis is completed, it takes it into that status. I would defer to officials at PSU and OUS on whether that's a good idea and what the consequences are. But from the point of view of OHSU and a mergee, it's really important for me, I think, to point out the what might be construed as irreconcilable differences between the two institutions, and that's primarily because of their missions, but it's not just because of their missions. As you've heard, there are examples of major universities around the country with academic health centers. What you will find, and Ohio State's a great example, is that those academic health centers operate essentially as an independent entity inside that university. And the key difference between the major institutions at the top of that list is funding. It's just that simple. There's an enormous investment that's been made in those institutions. And I'll show you a couple of numbers a little bit later. I've divided my remarks into different categories, but they're all fairly closely related. And I'm not going to read this to you, but I want to touch on each area. The faculty considerations are utmost in our mind, so I put that first. Our faculty really have a different sort of contract with the university than you might think, and than is typical. Representative Greenlich was actually a quintessential example of this. Very often, our faculty have to earn their own salaries, most of the time, either with clinical revenue or research revenue. We do not have substantial funding to pay the faculty unless they go out and bring the revenue to us. So it's a completely different model. And let me ask you to turn to the slides in the back, and I'm not going to show you a PowerPoint, and I'll come back to a couple of them, but if I could ask you to turn to the slides at the back, page 7, slide 13. And if you can see, you have to have your glasses on, I suspect, or at least I do, to see that table. But if you look at slide 13, page 7, what it shows you is the funding per medical student. It's twice as big as last time I showed you this. Is the funding per medical student at the Western medical schools. And OHSU's there's $11 million funded into the medical school and about $23,000 per student. If you look at UCSF, which has a very comparable history to OHSU's, it's 10 times that much. And if you look at Washington, it's $75 million as opposed to $11 million for comparable sorts of programs. So there's an enormous difference in the way those institutions operate, and the main difference is that the faculty at our institution earn their own living. And that's a pretty fundamental difference relative to a faculty that has a union and that has a contract with the university. Ours are virtually all annual appointments. So I just want to make sure that's in front of you as you think this through. The small part of OHSU faculty time that is truly compensated to teach is an underrepresentation of what most people at OHSU spend teaching. They will pay their own salary with their clinical or their research missions, and a tiny part, might be 10%, 15% of their salary may be paid out of tuition and state revenue to teach, when in fact they may spend substantially more than that amount of time teaching, more or less as a volunteer activity. That's a cultural kind of heritage at OHSU. People are there because they care very much about the educational mission. But it's a different kind of equation, and the physicians in particular at OHSU donate a portion of their salary to the School of Medicine as what's affectionately known as the Dean's Tax. In addition to that, they pay rent at market value for their clinics and put additional resources into the department for the academic programs of the department. So that the net of all that is that a physician, clinician, educator really makes about half of their community partners, their community counterparts. It might be 2/3, it might be 80%, it might be 50%, but it's certainly considerably less. What does that mean? It means that at any moment we're at risk of losing faculty. They're there because they want to be there, and our ability to retain them requires incredible focus on making that environment a good place for them to do the work they want to do, and to do it in the environment of all three missions, to be sure, but it has to work for them. Let me talk just for a minute about the merger process, but I won't belabor that. You've heard some of the issues already. We took 5 years to study the options before proposing the public corporation, and another 5 years to implement them. The implementation still came as quite a surprise to some of us. It was a be careful what you wish for a while, because there was an enormous effort required to implement new systems, to find the resources to invest in new systems. And remember, we didn't have any additional resources to do that, and to figure out how to operate them smoothly and efficiently. And that's a very easy thing to underestimate, and I know that some have said that our estimates of what it would cost are erroneous. There's an analysis now underway, as you've heard, that will help us with that. But we have costed the mergers in which we've engaged. We know what they cost, and they were much, much smaller undertakings, and they were in the tens of millions. So we know that implementing new systems, and they're entirely different systems at the two institutions, is very, very challenging, and you don't really achieve savings until you've done that. So it's easy to overestimate the savings. It's easy to say there won't be two of this or two of that, and with all due respect, the fact is we still will have two libraries, and most universities with an academic health center have a library director that directs that library. And so those functions don't go away. They may have different names, but the jobs themselves still have to get done. I think the fiscal considerations are very important to take into account here. One of the things I've explained about the faculty, but what I haven't explained is about the hospital. And if you look to the slides for just a minute, go back to the slides, and let's start through. The first slide just gives you the mission, the first page, and the second gives you a little with the growth and change and the total revenue pictures on page two, just give you a little revenue history. That's total revenue that's depicted in that slide four there. And if you want more detail on how we grew over the last three decades, you can see it in the growth and change chart. But if you go to page three, you can see that in the pie chart, the red portion of those pie charts represent clinical earnings, reimbursements for Medicare, Medicaid, Blue Cross, whoever pays for clinical services. And you can see that it in a given year represents 55-60%. This does not include the practice group, which also brings in revenue. So it's probably at least 60, might be 62 or 63% in the current fiscal year. Now, I've very rather grossly simplified what that money does in the next slide, and then in a more detailed way, in a little more precise way, in a subsequent slide. But in this slide six, I've tried to depict how the different functions are paid for at OHSU. And the red is the hospitals and clinics, and they're basically paid for by clinical revenue. The yellow are the research institutes, and they are basically paid for by research grants. But the educational mission is paid for in roughly a three-way partnership with the state, tuition, and anything else we can find. And the anything else we can find is mostly a subsidy from the clinical enterprise. There are little bits here and there, but most of that money is a passover from the clinics and the hospital. Now, if you look at the next page, we're beginning to get right to the heart of the matter. That graph, the histogram at the bottom of page 4, slide 8, shows you the net income of OHSU in the hospital and in the university. The yellow is the hospital and the blue is the university. The way our fiscals look actually as of this month, that might be a slight overstatement on the hospital side for our net income, and it's going to drop further next year. And the reason for that is that we're opening three new buildings, and it takes a while to ramp them up and bring in maximum revenue from those. But what you can see at a glance is that we balance because the hospital balances the university. And you can look at a million spreadsheets with transfers, but the bottom line is that the clinical operation subsidizes the university if the clinical operation is doing well. Now, if you look back in the early stages, you can see some areas where that didn't occur in this graph. And if you look back into the 80s, you would see some pretty deep negative numbers where we weren't investing capital in the hospital and we were not able to cross-subsidize those missions. And there's additional data about the capital investment, and I won't go into that in detail, but I think you can look at any of these graphs and see a dramatic change when the public corporation was formed. And the bottom line there is that we now generate our own cash to use for capital. And the state does not pay for that, with the exception of the Oregon Opportunity, half of which built a research building. And that was terrific and very helpful for the research enterprise. But all the upgrades in the hospital and the educational mission are really funded out of the cash generated by the hospital and clinics. Now, on the top of page 6, that spreadsheet with a bunch of red numbers there, those truly are red numbers. And they represent that in addition to subsidizing the educational mission, the hospital also provides, in fact, in this year we project $65 million worth of uncompensated care. So it has a public mission to provide care for the underserved as well, so that our health system has a tremendous responsibility. Some would say burden, but we don't. We embrace that mission, and when we formed the public corporation, we intended to keep that mission. But we have to be laser-like in our focus on our ability to generate cash to do those two very substantial things. And I won't go through the rest of these slides. The what I call, and this shows my age, the Pac-Man chart on the bottom of page 6 simply illustrates the different units at OHSU, and using that same color code, red for clinical, yellow for research, and green and blue for tuition and state, shows you how the different activities are funded. And I think the one thing you can see by just glancing at all these little pies is that the schools over on the left bottom, medicine, dentistry, nursing, and engineering, and allied health, have complicated pie charts. But the green and the blue, the tuition and the state, do not pay for the whole school. There's a lot of research funding, and there's a lot of clinical funding in those. Let me go back to the bottom of page 3 on this, and I'll finish up. But I need to say just a couple more things about the fiscal realities. In addition to our dependence on the health system, we also have a very strong relationship with the capital market. We have heavy debt. We maintain that with strong clinical earnings. We are rated for our bonds in the debt market, and we have been strongly advised by our financial advisors that even the structure of this bill would threaten our bond rating and will make them nervous, is the way they put it. And in fact, our bondholders have to approve major structural changes, or we are in default. So there are very serious financial consequences. We don't know them all. They haven't been thoroughly analyzed, but we're worried about it. And our financial advisors are very anxious about this bill, and whenever they visit, they want to know how likely we think it is to occur, because they rate us based on our ability to deliver our budget. And what we've become rather good at doing, don't mean to be immodest, but one of the things that's been responsible for the growth is that we've become quite good at predicting what's going to happen financially and then delivering it. And being able to make those predictions and make hard decisions and stop programs when we need to, start programs that will be a good investment, is part of what's allowed us to grow. So I think I don't need to belabor the focus and attention unit section. I think that's instinctive to you. We both have thin administrations. We are both very concerned about taking our eye off the ball. We have both achieved tremendous leverage in the programs that we've delivered. And I apologize to Representative Greenlick for having shown them this in another committee hearing. But if you look at the very last page of slides, this is an interesting graph, and we put this together for our Ways and Means testimony, and we're surprised to see it, frankly. And what this graph shows you with the green histograms here on the last page, the top diagram shows you our student enrollment. and that's the blue line, as a function of state dollars invested in the institution over time since just before the public corporation was formed. And what this shows you is we have not backed away from our educational mission. In fact, we've grown it. And I've taken OGI out of here, so I'm not cheating. That's not in this graph. This is just nursing, medicine, dentistry, and allied health. The yellow bar shows what would have been our funding had that initial funding just before the public corporation were corrected for inflation, just the CPI adjustment. So if you compare $73 million, our current biennial appropriation, to the $190 million, that gives you a purchasing power kind of comparison. And the graph below shows you the other reason that we're very nervous about this, and that is that we are facing a tremendous crisis in healthcare, and in particular workforce shortage. We have to deliver more medical student graduates, more nursing graduates, and more dental graduates, or none of us are going to be able to obtain healthcare when we most need it, which isn't that far away. And the challenge here is to be incredibly efficient and build on what we have, work on the margin, and form partnerships. And this graph, the bottom graph, shows what our state requests this session will deliver and at what cost. And if you look at the green bar, and this is hard to read, I apologize, but for the 09-11, and we've actually projected it out so you can see the running rate for 07-09, 09-11, and 11-13. That's what we're asking for the 07-09 appropriation. And you can see the cohorts of students that we will produce with that on that dashed blue line. It's tremendous leverage. And it's leverage because we are partnering with other institutions, PSU being one of them, as well as U of O and OSU, to build other sites where medical students can be trained, but build it on the chassis that exists and which, again, is subsidized from the health system. This leverage is a very delicate balance, and our concern is that the slightest misstep, and we will not be able to deliver even a fraction of the workforce needs that this state has over the next coming decades. So in conclusion, our concern is that House Bill 3024, while we completely agree is well-intentioned and has laudable goals, won't actually strengthen higher education in Portland the way it's currently constructed. The missions and cultures and fiscal models, perhaps most importantly of all, are just too different without a substantial investment in both institutions, frankly, to pull it off. I thank you for your consideration, and just if I could be so bold, if you really wanted to further such discussion, funding joint ventures and joint activities would probably go a lot further, but that's just me. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Doctor. Any questions? Representative Greenman?
Yes. Can I just ask two questions, please?
Thank you very much, Dr. Howard. You talked about the nature of the soft money faculty in the academic medical center. Is that much different than other academic medical centers?
It's considerably more extreme. The equation exists at almost all academic health centers, but ours is at the far end of the scale, probably in the top 1 to 5 in the country in terms of the amount of leverage.
But basically the concept, the cultural concept, of soft money faculty. I mean, University of Washington, for example, got audits that said many of the teaching faculty were getting paid 125% on research grants. And I mean, it's very different in the academic medical center than on campus in most universities that have an academic medical center.
Chairman Buckley, Representative Greenlick, it is different. I think there's a huge quantitative difference. However, University of Washington has $75 million to our $11 million for comparable schools, and in addition, an additional $100 million was recommended in the current legislative process. So with that sort of investment, we could make this work. but it's a very different dependency on those soft resources when there isn't additional money to invest.
May I ask one more question? Seems to me, as I remember, when OHSU proposed the legislature to become a public institution, and we've been studying this more than 5 years right now.
Right.
And OHSU wanted to become a public institution, and it passed 89-1 or something in the legislature, as I remember. The argument was that you didn't need extra money to do this, that the savings would more than compensate for whatever investment you needed to make in the move. So when you wanted to do it, you said, no, don't worry, it won't take any extra money. But now that you don't want to do it, it's going to take tons and tons of extra money? Is that?
Representative Greenlee, Chairman Buckley, we said that we would not come back and ask for additional resources for two biennia for 4 years and would continue to deliver all programs for those 4 years, all degree-granting programs. We did not say it wouldn't take money to invest, but to be honest, we underestimated rather dramatically the investment that would be required to build those systems. And what did not occur to us, and certainly was not a deal we thought we were striking, is that there would be no further investment after that. And I think it's in here, but I didn't state that since 1995, we have not received any state support for faculty salary increases. We have had, the faculty have had no cost of living increases, only performance-based merit increases since that time. We didn't think that would be the case, but that has proven to be the case.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Any other questions? Dr. Houck, this question, just trying to put this into a frame. With the faculty considerations, what is it specifically about this proposed merger that would change the way that faculty at OHSU would have to be compensated? Couldn't you keep that same model for OHSU?
The fear of the faculty, and it's based on colleagues at other institutions in which the Academic Health Center is joined, is that revenue from the medical school, if you're a medical school faculty, or from the health system, if you're a hospital director, would flow in the direction of the university proper. That is often the case in these embedded systems because it has the potential to generate revenue. And that's if you talk to some of the successes, and I think this will emerge in the study that's being done, even the one in Virginia that's 30 years old, the people at the Academic Health Center are not fond of it at all. I'm sure you can find examples of those who are. It came with a substantial additional investment from the state, and both institutions were actually in accreditation problems, which is certainly not the case for either institution here. So there was an urgency, a crisis, in fact, that created that sort of burning platform at that time. But now they have this same tension back and forth between the Academic Health Center and whether the finances flow. In our case, the School of Medicine faculty aren't overly fond of supporting anything outside of the School of Medicine, let alone outside the institution. So they really do pay this out of their pockets and take a financial salary hit to do so. And you can imagine that that's a tension and an equilibrium that you have to manage very carefully. So our concern, and we've been told this by numerous faculty, is that they will leave. It's just that simple. Mm-hmm. That our most productive and most mobile faculty, the highest clinical learners, are the ones who are the most vocal on our campus in their concern for this model.
Thank you. Thank you both very much. Very comprehensive testimony. Appreciate bringing it forward. Dr. Pern, our chancellor, would you be so kind to join us?
Thank you, Chair Buckley. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is George Pernsteiner with the Oregon University System, and in the interest of full disclosure, I am teaching this term at Portland State. I have not discussed my testimony either with the dean or with the provost, so.
Can we ask you questions about your salary, too, as we were talking
about? Well, yes, the salary for teaching is zero. I'm following in Representative Greenlee's footsteps.
Absolutely.
Thank you again for the opportunity to discuss this with you today. I'm going to take a point of view that is really one that the Board of Higher Education is taking right now. And that is the, if you will, the lens through which I will want to look at the legislation that's before you and discuss also the work that the Board is now doing that will pertain to this. The Board views the possible merger of OHSU and PSU through the lens of its strategic plan. And I believe you had a presentation about the strategic plan earlier in this session, but the major goals of those really were four: to create an educated citizenry that provides access for all Oregonians to post-secondary education, a quality post-secondary education, to ensure high-quality student learning that will contribute to subsequent student success in life, that will create original knowledge and advance innovation, and contribute to the economic, civic, and cultural life of communities in all regions of the state. This is not an institutional-based view. It is rather a state-based view of the purposes of higher education. And it's really the focus that the board is bringing right now to looking at the next 20 years of planning for post-secondary education in the state. This year, two things are occurring in that regard. The first is that each campus is discussing with the board its own mission, its own focus, its own strategic plan for the next 20 years, in order that the board can determine how each of those institutions fits within a portfolio of institutions that will contribute to achieving the four goals which the board has enunciated. The second is that the board has created a strategic initiatives committee, which began work last week. This committee we'll be looking at a variety of things, about four specific areas, but one of those areas will in fact be the finding out how to identify and meet the education and research needs of the Portland metropolitan area. One of the pieces that we are undertaking, of course, involves hiring Robert Zemsky. And Representative Greenlick mentioned Bob Zemsky earlier. He is from the University of Pennsylvania. He's a well-respected consultant in this field, longtime member of the University of Pennsylvania faculty. And we've asked Dr. Zemsky and his colleagues to look at several things. We asked them to look specifically at the benefits and the costs of a merger of OHSU and PSU. That was one of the things we've asked them to look at. We've asked them to look also at the benefits and the costs of other such mergers and demergers, there have been a few of those, around the country, in order to figure out what can we learn from what others have done. The third is to look internally at OHSU and at PSU to determine the differences in operation, in philosophy, and in the financial models of the institutions. And I believe that Provost Cook and Halleck have mentioned several of those, but we've actually asked Dr. Zemsky to look at that in more depth. I also specifically asked him to look at something else, which is those areas short of full merger that might benefit by joint operations. In other words, are there things that the two institutions could do together in a formal way, short of merging both institutions, that either would result in cost savings or improve service? And we'd like them to take a look at that as well. How a merger or a closer alliance of OHSU and PSU might affect the educational and research needs of the Portland metropolitan area, including workforce needs, meeting the needs of industry, meeting the needs of diverse student populations. I asked them to look also, and they won't look very deeply in this because the board will later on, what other components of Oregon higher education might be considered as the board looks at how to best serve the needs of the people and the businesses in the metro area. In other words, we have more resources in the metro area or that could be brought to the metro area than just the programs of Portland State and OHSU. We're looking also, asked them to look also at the effectiveness and opportunities for improvement in the joint research efforts now carried on by Oregon's universities. You heard some of the collaboration between OHSU and PSU, but you've probably also heard discussion of ONAMI and other signature research centers that involve both of those institutions as well as the University of Oregon and Oregon State University and now the Oregon Institute of Technology. And finally, we've asked them to look at what kind of investment would be needed to help ensure the success of a merger of OHSU and PSU. And success, as we are defining it, is meeting those educational needs of the Portland metropolitan area. The results of that reconnaissance, and I call it a reconnaissance because it's not going to look at every conceivable aspect, will become available later in April, and they will inform the work of the board and presumably of this subcommittee as we move forward. But I want to speak briefly also, before I know what the results of the study are, which is always a dangerous thing to do. I wouldn't let my students do that. But I wanted to speak briefly about some of the things in the bill. A lot of the background that the bill asks the new board of the Portland Metropolitan University to look at and develop will, in fact, be addressed in Professor Zemsky's study or as part of other work that the board is doing as part of its Strategic Initiatives Committee. We expect that the board will examine the roles and the programs offered by the University of Oregon, Oregon State University, Eastern Oregon University, which actually has locations at Mount Hood Community College, for example, the Oregon Institute of Technology, and the community colleges in the efforts which the board will be undertaking to identify and figure out how to meet the needs of the Portland metropolitan area with regard to education and research. That's somewhat broader than what's called for in the bill, but I think if you take a state perspective, which the board is taking, you have to take into account the needs of the whole area and all of the resources which you might be able to bring to bear to meet those needs. The bill calls for a look into the possibility of local taxation for the merged university, something that's been discussed but not considered very seriously in the past. This will raise a question. It'll raise a question of whether public higher education in Oregon remains a state function or devolves to local government. The implications of that for the state could be significant and will be informed by other work that I think the Strategic Initiatives Committee is about to undertake. Now, what's that code for? Let me explain what I think that's code for. We have, as I've noted in this state, a disparity between the college-going rates of rural Oregonians and of Oregonians in inner cities with those of the rest of the state. We also recognize the demographics of the state's emerging student population will be significantly different over the next decade than they were in the last decade. And we also recognize that the likelihood of a young person going on to college, community college or university, today in Oregon is lower than it was about 10 years ago. All of these things at a time when we recognize, and you've heard the testimony from other agencies, that in fact with the demographic change, with the changes in the world economy, there is an imperative now that our population be even more highly educated than in the past. This is the framework within which the board will be looking at what are the needs of the state and of the Portland metropolitan area with regard to education and research. And those are some of the things that I think will have to be brought to the table as we look at whether or not OHSU and PSU should be merged, or what kinds of approaches we might take to educate Oregonians as we move in to the later part of this century. But the question of local funding versus state funding becomes important, just as it was for K-12, just as it has been for community colleges, as you look at the equality of opportunity and the equality of program around the state. Those will be issues which we have not had to join before, but which I think legitimately deserve consideration as we move forward. The most important questions, though, relate to how this merger or proposed merger might improve the education and research offerings in the metro area. You heard Provost Halleck talk about the entrepreneurial spirit of OHSU's faculty, for which we applaud them. Is the model which they bring for supporting themselves and the institution the same kind of a model that could be brought into a public corporation for Portland State University, whose main focus has historically been on educating students, which is a much different business model than, in fact, OHSU has been able to employ for the last dozen years? Well, if, in fact, we go in that direction, will that in turn require the development of greater instructional programs at the community colleges or by other OUS institutions in order to ensure that the educational needs of people in the Portland metropolitan area are met if the model of the approach taken by the public corporation is different than that which has been has prevailed in the past? I think Representative Greenlick, Provost Cook, and Provost Halleck have all said something very important which I want to reemphasize. A proposed merger or a real merger will not obviate the need for investment by the state in the future of its citizens. It won't take away the critical need to maintain Portland State University's facilities or to build out its science labs. It won't take away the requirement to fund faculty salaries and enrollment growth at reasonable levels, and it won't take away the imperative to keep tuition affordable for Oregonians. Those are the things that I think all must be considered, regardless of how you move forward on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chancellor. Any questions, gentlemen? Representative Klim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess what I'm curious about is, you know, this bill, the way Representative Greenlick talked about it, initially may not even lead to a merger. It leads to a board, and then they would discuss whether there's a merger. But it does certainly pull PSU out of the state system. So that's the part I want to focus on, since that's the part that's a bill. I mean, this is not an old a debate whether or not the state system, you know, still is a useful tool today. I know you've done a ton since coming to the office to change the relationship between the campuses and the chancellor's office, and I just wondered if you could maybe walk us through some of them, because I think people may, in the public at least, still not realize what's different today from, you know, even 5 years ago.
Chair Buckley, Representative Klim, thank you very much for that question. There are a lot of things different. There's a lot more autonomy for campuses with regard to academic program. And in fact, the control point for academic programs now has become the Council of Provosts, on which Provost Halleck and Provost Cook both sit, which review all of the programs now rather than having that done by the Chancellor's Office. Another thing, we consider seriously the financial situation of each of the institutions and try to find ways to ensure that each of them can remain and become viable as we move forward. And that's one of the things I didn't mention that the Board will be looking at this year. And we recognize that each one is in a somewhat different position. I recall a few minutes ago that Representative Greenlick talked about a capitation formula. Capitation formula may work for certain of our programs. However, we have for Oregon State University, for example, more than $100 million a biennium in state funding for the statewide public services. We have a variety of programs like that that we have to look at individually as to how we move forward. We are doing much more work now in coordinating the work of the campuses rather than dictating the work of the campuses with regard to what they do with regard to capital construction, regard to what they do with capital repair, regard to what they do with their deferred maintenance projects, but also with regard to the approaches they take here in Salem. We also look at trying to provide a framework for some of the major policy issues, be it affordability. Tuition affordability was important. It has two dimensions. As you know, the shared responsibility model deals with one, having a tying tuition to the median family income of Oregonians is another. That is a board responsibility. Each of the campuses is then orchestrated within that, and it may not be to the individual self-interest of each campus, but it is to the self-interest of the state that the board is responsive in that regard. So it's kind of a mixed answer to a question that should have a mixed answer, I think.
Quick follow-up on one of the things that I learned, and I know they're next, so I don't want to go on much longer, through the Oregon Student Association, and this is really Representative Krummel's point that he had about kind of almost advocacy, you know, the strength of the voice, and I found that when I would walk into an office trying to advocate for just OSU, if they weren't an alumni and they didn't go there, it wasn't that helpful, or it wasn't someone from Corvallis. And the system, and speaking with one voice through the system when appropriate and letting the presidents come in and speak for themselves when appropriate seems to be the right method for the legislature to be able to hear what the common and universal problems are, like access and affordability. I mean, that is not just a regional problem or an urban problem or a Eugene problem. And if I recall, the other piece of this is, haven't you shifted a lot of the even centralized administrative functions? So you have partnerships with OSU on payroll and other things that the chancellor's office used to do, and your FTE, I think, are, you know, half or something of what they used to be because you figured out how to make the partnership work and make a leaner, meaner, not that you're mean, but leaner, meaner chancellor's office.
Chair Buckley, Representative Klim, yes, thank you. I probably am meaner, but that's neither here nor there. Yes, all of those things are true. We are about half the size that we were 2.5 years ago in terms of staffing. Oregon State University provides a lot of the centralized services now. They essentially merge data centers with us, as an example, and are providing, I think, a very respectable and respected level of service to the regional campuses, which are served out of that one location. But you raise, I think, an important point that I want to emphasize. The board, in looking at the system, is looking at the big policy issues. They are looking at affordability writ large. They are looking at access writ large. They are identifying those statewide issues that are not necessarily the province of any one institution. And when I mentioned some of the things a few minutes ago that the board will care about as it looks at meeting the needs of the Portland metropolitan area, those are not the issues of any individual institution. They are what matters for the state and the people of the state. And that really is the focus which the board is bringing. And that is the focus that I hope we all bring when we come to the Capitol as presidents, as students, as faculty, and even as the chancellor's office during this session and all the things we talk about.
Thank you. Representative Lim.
Chancellor, thank you very much. Well spoken, very eloquently spoken. Anyway, I'm asking the same question, that how much was the cost for the study? And you mentioned that the study will be done sometime late April. And when could we access to the study when it's completed?
Chair Buckley, Representative Lim, the study cost is $170,000, and I will be getting a draft of the report, I believe, around the 24th or 5th of April. So that's when I will have it, and so you can have it shortly thereafter.
Okay. Thank you very much, Jim Spurston. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
Your work, as always.
Thank you very much.
Colleagues, we have two more panels to go through. I'm going to try to go through each in about 7 or 8 minutes each. So Brett Rowlett and Margie Hoffman. Get another panel out this. We have, after this, we have Niles Lehman and Kevin Reynolds, it looks like, coming up after this.
All right.
Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Buckley, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Brett Rowlett. I'm legislative director with the Oregon Student Association. OSA represents 100,000 students statewide, including students at the campuses of PSU and OHSU. I'm here today to share concerns with you that students have on the proposed merger of PSU and OHSU. I'm not going to repeat a lot of what you've heard already, and I've provided you with written testimony. But you know, while we look forward to revealing the results of the study that's going to be released next month, one of the major concerns that the students share on this proposed merger is the impact that it could have system-wide. We've seen, as students, the impact going towards a public corporation of OHSU that it's had on students. Most notably, students feel that the state has kind of had a out of sight, out of mind attitude when it comes to state support for OHSU. I've included the tuition increases that students have faced, which have been pretty dramatic for the students at both PSU and OHSU. But most notably at OHSU, when we have reduced the amount of state support that we've offered the school, we've seen the students' tuition go up, and they've been graduating with greater and greater amounts of debt. And that's had a couple different impacts on students. One, it's forced OHSU at times to prioritize out-of-state students over Oregonians. But also, the amount of debt that students graduate with because their tuition has gone up is forcing them to take jobs after college in areas that they might not otherwise want to. Instead of going to rural or underrepresented communities, they're going to where they can get a higher salary to pay back the debt that they're graduating with. And that's a very similar concern for students at PSU. As we move, you know, if we would move PSU into a public corporation, the fear of students statewide is that that would be the movement that we would do with the other institutions in the system. And while maybe a couple of the institutions would be fine as public corporations, we're somewhat concerned about the impact it could have on our regional institutions, and then the support for the other institutions statewide, the impact it would have on students. So while we look forward to analyzing the report when it comes out, and we still have an open mind towards the merger as proposed, we just wanted to share those concerns with you today. So thanks for your time.
Do you have any questions?
I have just a brief question. You have the tuition at the medical school has increased 60% since 2001. How does that compare to the average increase in tuition across the other universities? 2001.
Chair Buckley, Representative Greenlick, I don't have the figures for me or with me on the national.
It's not too far. No, I mean just in the state.
Just in the state.
It seems like it may not be too far off.
It's similar to the other institutions, but when you look at the overall cost that is for the student, the final numbers of debt that they're graduating with are much greater.
Absolutely.
Chair Buckley, members of the committee, my name is Margie Hoffman. I represent the Services Employees International Union Local 503. We represent over 2,900 classified staff in the Oregon University system, including 550 employees at Portland State University. While we look forward to reviewing the results of the Oregon University system's study and its impacts on employees both at Portland State University or at Portland State University, just like to say we look forward to working with Chair Buckley, members of the committee, especially Representative Greenlick, on this idea as we move forward. We'd like to take a moment of your time to address some of the concerns that we have with the bill in its current form. We believe the current piece of legislation would involve major policy decisions, and we want to be careful thinking about the mission and institutional development of Portland State University. We're supportive of the governor's vision and actually many legislators' vision to fully to fund accessible quality education. We're supportive of more funding to allow our universities to excel, like the University of Washington, for example. SEIU encourages the legislature to make strong investment in higher education and specifically access to higher education for students. However, this piece of legislation is not a move to necessarily strengthen the state's commitment to higher education, but a move to privatize a public institution of learning and shift the responsibility of public education from the state of Oregon to private interests. Removing Oregon's largest, most urban university from Oregon University System threatens the success of the public university system overall, and that's a big concern of ours. Aside from our policy concerns with this legislation, we also have logistical concerns regarding the rights that our workers have bargained in our current contracts in regards to union representation and benefits. So, again, we look forward to seeing the results of the OUS study, and we look forward to working with representatives of the committee to make sure that our workers are taken care of. Appreciate your time. Be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much. Any questions? Representative Klim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in light of the time, you know, maybe getting me some information afterwards would be more appropriate, but I was curious about sort of the status of employees at each campus. There was a reference in some earlier testimony that it was different, and I would like to sort of get a sense of, you know, what kind of workers are unionized at each, where is it different? So I think I'd trying to get a handle on what we're talking about here.
I don't want to speak on behalf of other unions, but I will just reference testimony issued earlier today from on behalf of Portland State University. There are let me just see. Instructional faculty, FTE, and part-time employees are unionized. My organization, the Local 503, represents facilities workers and other member and other employees at the organization. The concern is when you combine two institutions, particularly administrations, what happens to the overall FTE of both organizations?
Follow, Mr. Chair.
Follow?
So in the classified arena, do you represent people on both campuses currently?
Just Portland State University.
That's me, is at OHSU. The American Association of Universities Professors represents the full-time faculty at PSU, and the American Federation of Teachers represents part-time. I helped organize that AFT local.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to figure out exactly. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you both for your testimony.
Thank you for your time.
We have Niles Lehman and Kevin Reynolds, please. Welcome, gentlemen. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thanks. Chairman Buckley, members of the committee, my name is Niles Lehman, and I'm a professor of chemistry at Portland State University, and I'm here just on my own behalf. I'm not here representing the university or anybody else. And I'm here to offer my support for the concept of a merger between PSU and OHSU. I'm not a financial wizard, so I can't speak to the ins and outs of the finances behind it. I think that a merger only makes sense if you can do it from a financially, fiscally sound point of view. But as a biochemist, a chemistry professor, someone who spends most of his time just pipetting colorless solutions back and forth in a test tube when I'm not teaching, I think the idea of a merger between these two institutions is a good idea and concept. And I say that for two reasons. First of all, a majority of our funding to do research at PSU or anywhere depends on federal sources. And having a reputation that would be enhanced if our two universities were merged would, improve our chances of getting federal funding. I don't discount some of the great things that PSU has done, but in terms of sciences, we're not really on the national radar yet. And I think that having the backing, if you will, of OHSU would help us. And I think the same thing works in reverse. I think the resources of PSU could be used to enhance the stature of OHSU. The second thing that I think would be a benefit of such a merger is the collaborative ventures between us down at PSU and the scientists up at OHSU. There's many times when a project would benefit if we had a more formal collaborative structure that would help us share students and resources and programs and things like that, equipment, without having to go through administrative hurdles. And so I'm just here to support the idea, and that's all I have to say. Thank you very much for your time. Be happy to answer questions.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Chairman Buckley, members of the committee. My name's Kevin Reynolds. I'm chair of the chemistry department. I joined the chemistry department about 18 months ago. I was recruited here from actually Virginia Commonwealth University. I've worked very hard with the department. Our department's now about 50% funded by tuition dollars and about 50% supported by research dollars. So, I mean, there's tremendous growth at our department and many other departments. And I've worked very hard over the last 18 months to build lots of different collaborative ventures with different parts of our Oregon Health Sciences University. So I think we're obviously moving in the right direction. I'm very excited by that. My view is, my personal view is that 5 or 10 years out from now, we certainly should be a comprehensive university. I've come from a comprehensive university, and I think that's a place we should go. Whether or not this legislation particularly is the right path to go, I don't know. I leave that to the powers that be, provosts and everyone else, people who know. But I really just came today to say that I think the right place to go, ultimately, for Portland, for the two universities and for the state of Oregon, is a combined comprehensive university. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Any questions, gentlemen?
Can I ask just a brief question about Virginia Commonwealth, because I've never talked to a faculty person from there. I mean, is there a lot of strain between, say, the science department on campus and the science department at the Academic Medical Center? Or does that work pretty well?
Sure. There's always accusations between the two, but it's not. It works, and clearly the collaboration worked, from my perspective and from my counterparts there. But they take our money. No, you take our money. There's a lot of that.
And deciding the sports mascot wasn't the big problem.
Sports is not my cup of tea.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you both for being here today and offering your opinions. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Is there anyone else who hasn't had a chance to testify that would want to get a minute in with us on this bill? If not, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3024. Gentlemen, thank you for your time. I'm going to go ahead and close this committee hearing for our subcommittee.